morning and welcome to Midpoint. I'm your host, Shelley Rebeck, and I'm here with my co-host,
Janet Scherberger.
And Patty Perkey is our phone answerer, and she would love to take your calls and comments during the show at 813-239-9663. Or you can email us here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. Here at Midpoint, we bring you the world and national news and public affairs with a local Tampa Bay area perspective. Today, we are focusing on Afghanistan and the extraordinary Afghan refugee airlift undertaken by the United States to rescue our Afghan allies. They face persecution and danger from the Taliban, who rapidly reconquered Afghanistan as we committed to leave their country following 20 years of war there. First, a very brief history of the Afghanistan war. It began in 2001 and was triggered by the September 11th attacks on the U.S. by al-Qaeda. It consisted of three phases. The first phase was toppling the Taliban initially, who provided sanctuary for al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. This phase was brief, lasting just 2 months. The second phase, the six Bush administration years from 2002 until 2008, was marked by a U.S. strategy of defeating the Taliban militarily and building a nation state favorable to the United States in Afghanistan. The plan was to allow the U.S. military to gain a bigger footprint in the region and to not allow terrorist bases to ever take root there again. The third phase began in 2008 and accelerated with President Barack Obama's 2009 decision to temporarily increase the U.S. troop presence in Afghanistan. This larger force was used to protect the civilian population and public institutions from more Taliban attacks and to support efforts to reintegrate insurgents into Afghan society. Beginning in 2011, after Osama bin Laden's capture in May, with the war at a stalemate, major combat operations there ended, and security responsibilities were supposed to be gradually handed over to the Afghan military and police. Needless to say, this new approach largely failed to achieve its aims. Insurgent attacks and civilian casualties remained high, while the Afghan military and police units taking over security duties were not prepared to hold off the Taliban. Nevertheless, we persisted there, while the Trump administration then began negotiations in 2018 with the Taliban to develop a plan for full U.S. troop withdrawal. In mid-April, President Biden, declaring that the United States had long ago accomplished its mission of denying terrorists a safe haven in Afghanistan, announced that all American troops would leave the country by September 11th. He later moved the date up to August 31st. But President Biden said that after nearly 20 years of war, it was clear that the U.S. military could not transform Afghanistan into a modern, stable democracy, despite the war taking more than 170,000 Afghan and American lives and costing over $2 trillion. As the last evacuation flight departed just 3 days ago, according to the New York Times, it left behind tens of thousands of people who might be eligible for expedited U.S. visas. These are people who supported the U.S. mission in Afghanistan and who now may be targeted for retribution by the Taliban. But at the same time, following the stunningly rapid collapse of the Afghan government and military, the enormous U.S. evacuation operation airlifted some 123,000 people out of the country just over the last 2 months. Now, the Tampa Bay area will soon be welcoming upwards of 1,000 or more Afghan refugees fleeing persecution by the Taliban at home. Local social service agencies and Afghan immigrants who are here now are all ready to assist them with their transition to America. They will be our guests on today's show. Let me welcome in the studio with us Ms. Magda El-Kadi, president of Radiant Hands, a local nonprofit agency. Radiant Hands Tampa works with the resettlement of refugees primarily, but not exclusively, from Muslim and or Arabic-speaking countries, and has served families that have fled from a number of war-torn countries, just like Afghanistan, including Somalia, Syria, Iraq, Sudan, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and the Republic of Congo. We're happy to have you with us, Ms. Alkadi.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Our guest on the telephone a little later is Ms. Lourdes Macias, Florida Statewide Director of Refugee Services for Lutheran Services, or LSF of Florida. LSF provides refugee resettlement services to people like those from Afghanistan who have to flee their homes with little time to prepare or gather any belongings. They often arrive without language skills to deal with the trauma of deprivation, persecution, and culture shock. Our guest and her agency help newcomers from all regions of the world resettle safely in communities throughout Florida. Do we have Lourdes Macias with us, Janet?
Yes, Lourdes, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, welcome. Thank you. Glad you could join us.
I'm glad to be part of it.
Great. Mm-hmm. Later in the show, we also hope to hear from Gul Shabar, who is a local Afghan immigrant who has already made his home in the Tampa Bay area, and he is anxiously hoping to welcome and assist the newly arriving Afghans to establish themselves and join our community, too. The new Afghan refugees, like so many refugee populations before them, will find that the Tampa Bay area is a welcoming community. In fact, its welcome is official, so says the Tampa City Council in a recent formal resolution. Janet, can you please tell us about that?
Yeah, so last Thursday at their city council meeting, the city council voted unanimously in support of a resolution supporting Afghan refugees coming to the city of Tampa. There was a little bit of discussion about whether or not Tampa City Council actually should be engaged in foreign policy, but it was a unanimous vote, and the resolution was put forward by Councilmember Luis Vieira. So let's hear from him right now. This is what he said in introducing the resolution. We should be playing that. Well, it looks like we don't have that.
Oh, okay. Well, in any event, you know, one of the things that was, you know, somewhat moving about that presentation was both Luis Vieira and Guido Maniscalco are the children of immigrants, first-generation Americans, and they spoke about the fact that Tampa was so welcoming to their families, and they wanted to have that experience reflected in the new immigrants who come to our city.
Right. They talked a great deal about how much Tampa's growth and history and development was the result of people who immigrated to this country and to this area.
Yeah, certainly Tampa grew around the immigrant community, especially in Ybor City. You know, the Latins, the Cubans, the Italians, the Germans, the Jews.
Oh, I have that now. Do you want to listen to it?
Sure.
I think I got it. Let's see if I can do it. Oh, no, don't have it. Sorry.
Okay. Well, this is community radio. We do what we can with what we have. But if you, our listeners, have questions or comments about welcoming the Afghan refugees to the Tampa Bay area, please give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. Do you think the U.S. did all that it could do to protect the Afghan people who aided us in Afghanistan? What more could have been done? Are you willing to help the Afghani refugees who did make it out with little but the clothes on their back? Let's hear from you, WMNF listeners. So let me start with Lourdes Macias. You're with us, Lourdes?
I am.
Great. Now, you are from Lutheran Services. Tell us about what Lutheran Services as an agency is responsible for in with respect to the resettlement of refugees like the Afghans. And also, if you know, can you tell us who are the Afghan refugees that we can expect to welcome to the Tampa Bay area soon, and how did they come to be placed here in Tampa?
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. Yes, well, I have to say that Lutheran Services Florida has been resettling refugees since 1973. So it isn't new to us. I mean, that's how pretty much LSF started. you know, it is the core of all the programs and our organization. And since we have resettled different refugees, I mean, refugees from different nationalities, including Afghani refugees, as a matter of fact, we have been contacted by refugees that have been resettled by LSF in the past, in 1983, 1985, that they want to join the efforts of, you know, helping and supporting the new Afghan refugees that are arriving. So part of the things that LSF is responsible for, we work with Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services up in Baltimore, you know, in the efforts of resettling refugees here in Tampa, Florida. Our work here, we've been called affiliates, and our work here on the ground is pretty much, you know, welcoming the refugees at the airport. So we get them ready, we set up their apartments, we put all the furniture in there. We look for housing in our community. Later on, we provide cultural orientation. We help them out integrating into our communities by registering children in school, finding jobs for the adults, you know, helping them out to learn English if necessary, applying for all the benefits that they are eligible for when they arrive, like food stamps, cash assistance, and Medicaid. You know, pretty much what our role is in assist them in, you know, getting welcoming our communities, but at the same time, integration, which is the key, learning the American culture, learning our communities, learning how to get around, learn pretty much, you know, how, you know, helping them out with education if it is needed in their career, you know, professional field. You know, we assist them, for example, we take a look at what are the credentials they bring, and then through the career laddering program, we help them out in getting an equivalent of their degrees and hopefully to get in their field back when they get here into the United States.
So are these resources government funded, or are they funded by private donations or grants, or how are these resources funded?
The resettlement process, the resettlement program has always been a government and private partnership. It is impossible for us to do an effective resettlement of refugees if the communities, they don't help. Throughout many years, you know, the government provides assistance, I mean, or funding for us to provide the support to the refugee. But that funding is not enough. I mean, the Department of State, through the Bureau of Population and Migration, that these programs are getting set up in the community. However, you know, it is not enough what we get from the government for us to provide, you know, an effective resettlement. So Lutheran churches, congregations, many different denominations, community organizations, individuals have always helped the refugee resettlement pretty much on the ground. What they have done, they contribute with furniture. They contribute with gift cards. They sign up to volunteer. They sign up as a sponsor of a refugee family. Because, again, it's not enough what we do as, you know, resettlement workers on the ground. We need someone that could assist the family on an ongoing basis.
And Lutheran mm-hmm. Services is not the only local resettlement agency assisting refugees, right? I mean, we have Gulf Coast Jewish Family Services over in Pinellas also involved in refugee resettlement, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yes. And our guest in the studio, Magda El-Khadi, is here from Radiant Hands, which is a private nonprofit that works primarily with Arabic-speaking and Muslim refugees. Right, Magda?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So there are resources locally. But I'm curious, how is it that the Afghan refugees coming to the Tampa Bay area, how is it that they're coming here as opposed to anywhere else, like Nebraska or California or wherever? Like, do they get to choose where they want to settle in the United States once they're vetted and they receive their special immigrant visa? Can they come to the United States and basically go wherever they want? Or are they coming to this area because of connections with the military at CENTCOM, which was so deeply involved in the war in the region? Or how is it How is it happening that we're getting so, that we expect to get so many in this area?
You asking me the question?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, awesome. Yes. You know, refugees, all the refugees, they're processed in different ways, but the special immigrant visa cases, most of the time, they have a tie here in the United States. And when I'm talking about a tie, I mean either a relative, someone that they know, or a former military that used to work with them, you know, in Afghanistan.
Yeah, because we read a lot about the interpreters, for example, that who worked with the military over 20 years of war in Afghanistan. They no doubt have English skills working as an interpreter. Okay. And they may have a sponsor who they worked with, a former military person.
Exactly. So always the Bureau of Population and Migration has honored the preference where the refugee wants to go.
Okay.
So let's say, for example, if now, you know, they've been pretty much putting a military bases in Virginia, Texas, and Missouri. So while they go through all this vetting process and then application for SIV status, or if they don't want to wait, they could be released on parole, and then they could make to the final destination that they want to. So, for example, if they say, I want to go to Florida because I have a cousin in Florida and I want to go with them. So they're being released and they come to the final destination. And there will be, of course, the Department of State will work with one of the national organizations that has affiliates on the ground that they could provide the services to that SIV, Lutheran Services or Coast Coast, you know, LIRS or Hyatt.
Excuse me, Lourdes, who does this vetting? It's not like the local resettlement agencies that does. I know that there are people, you know, we see in the news and on Fox News, and, you know, there are people who are so worried that, you know, terrorists are going to slip in among these refugees because we airlifted 120,000 plus people out of a Muslim country. And I wonder, you know, maybe you can explain, who does the vetting? It's not Radiant Hands who works with Muslims. It's not Lutheran Services or Gulf Coast Jewish Family Services. No. Who does that vetting?
The Department of Homeland Security. It's not a volunteer agency. It is not an affiliate or a community-based organization here in our communities. They're right now, they are in military bases, and they have been processed by the Department of Homeland Security. When they are vetted, I mean, nobody understands the extent of the vetting process that it will take for the refugee. It's not even, I will have to say that sometimes they, I usually put it this way. Most of the time, it's like you applying for a federal job. You have to be vetted at a federal level. So imagine this. They go through fingerprinting. They go through background checks. They go through different checks, interagency checks, all kinds of, you know, investigations that, you know, process through. And especially, you know, when we're talking about name checks, which is the most difficult because, again, how many Mohammeds could be there? So when the refugees, they go through all of that, believe me, they are not going to be released to our communities unless they have clearance to be released into our communities.
Well, I think that people should understand that. I appreciate you explaining that rigorous vetting process. I don't know if WMNF listeners have any concerns about that. If you do, please let us know. And if you have questions about that vetting process, give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org and let us understand those concerns. Maybe Ms. Macias or Ms. Al-Qadi can alleviate your concerns if you have them. So, all right. Well, let me thank you, Ms. Macias. Let me turn to Ms. Al-Qadi now from Radiant Hands. And let me ask you, how does Radiant Hands hope to assist the refugees? And how did Radiant Hands come to be involved in the resettlement process? And do you feel like your organization has a special value to the community of Afghan refugees because of your base in the Muslim community?
So it's an interesting story. I am actually an educator and a school administrator by profession, and I've been in education since 1992. And over the years, what we found was students who are having difficulties in school often have difficulties at home. And when we'd start to meet with the families, we found that sometimes it was a divorced mother, a widowed mother, some illness had hit the family, they weren't able to cope with it. So I started looking for an organization that could help the women so that they could better support their families. And in January 2015, we opened the Tampa office of Radiant Hands. And our mission is to empower women and families. And so we started offering services, starting with counseling. We offered services to teach women how to drive who didn't know how to drive. We started guiding them into GED courses if they hadn't finished.
And is that primarily women in the Muslim community?
So that was our target, but we served women from all communities. We built an alliance with the Springs. And so at the Springs, they did group counseling for women from abused households. We offered the individual counseling. And everything, of course, is free of charge. We are supported by the community, and we don't charge anybody for the services that we provide. So we were doing this from January to October, and in October we were visited by Janet Blair, who represented the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and she said, "We need your help. You offer all of these services that our refugees need when they come here, but we're not quite sure how to work with the Muslim and Arabic-speaking population, and since that seems to be your strength, we need your help." We didn't want to jump in without knowing that we could actually alleviate the problem, so we started going to the Refugee Task Force meetings, getting as much information as we could. Amira from Coptic Charities met with me and said, "Listen, if you want to know how it works, come with me and meet one of these families that just arrived, and I'll show you how the process works." And so we visited our first, it was my first Syrian family to meet. We asked them, "What do you need? What is it that's missing?" And they talked about things besides money, besides financial, just things that reminded them of their homes and that reminded them of their culture and that made them feel at home here. So we started, first of all, we signed up to be providers of services, and we started building welcome baskets. And what we put into these welcome baskets came from what these refugee families were telling us they wanted. They wanted prayer rugs. They wanted a Quran, a copy of the holy book that we have. They wanted a teapot, a coffee, I don't know what you call them in English, but that you make Turkish coffee in. So we started putting teacups, teapots, a box of tea, packages of coffee, different foods from their countries, and then information cards in Arabic and English so that they could contact us and reach out to us. We also included for every refugee family a phone because they did not have cell phones when they came. And we realized that they needed GPS services. They didn't know how to get anywhere. They needed translation services. And all of that could be found on phone. So we built partnerships with cell phone companies within Tampa who gave us discounted rates, and we would get them in bulk, 50 phones at a time, because from 2015 to 2017, we helped resettle over 350 families. Every family was an average of 5 members. Lutheran services, Jewish, Gulf Coast Jewish, Catholic charities, all of them work intensely with the families for the first 90 days. After that, the families are pretty much on their own. Their money has run out. They are given $1,100 per person. And once that $1,100 per person runs out, they have no money. So we collected funds from the community. We collected a lot of furniture. We had a storage container, which we gave up a couple of years ago. And we are re-renting a facility now so that we can accept furniture from families in the community so we can help these people furnish their home. We don't want them to take that $1,100 per person allowance to buy furniture.
Where does that allowance come from? Who gives them
that?
So that
comes from the government. The government gives the local resettling agencies that amount of money to give these families when they arrive. And they sign their own leases, so they are financially responsible to pay. And they have to pay their own electricity bills. And a lot of things they just don't know how to do yet. They've never had a bank account. We help them open bank accounts. We help them learn bus routes. It's a very new system for them. We have families who volunteer. They're like our volunteer Uber services. They will pick up families and take them places if they need to go to a doctor's appointment. We help them get their kids registered in school. All the resettling agencies, that's part of their job. They don't have time to do all of that. They get overwhelmed when the numbers come in. And so we have tried to alleviate that stress and be that connection with our community. We introduce them to the Middle Eastern groceries, some of the Afghani families. So as a school administrator, there were several Afghani families who came in the 80s who were my students. now they are some of our best volunteers as the new Afghani families come in. And they know Lutheran Services because that's who brought them into the Tampa Bay area. We've built connections with a lot of the churches, the synagogues in the area, Hyde Park, United Methodist, Unitarian Universalist, a lot of the local community churches, the Latter-day Saints. We held town hall meetings when it happened the first time, and we will be probably holding those town hall meetings again. We rented halls in mosques, at embassy suites, wherever we could get the largest number of people. And we do volunteer training. It is very important that volunteers be trained on how to help them succeed and not how to enable them and make them weaker. So a lot of people, their hearts are just touched, and we want to do everything for this family.
Right. It's that, like, teach a man to fish and he eats forever, as opposed to giving him a fish sandwich and he has a meal.
Yes.
Right?
So Radiant Hands won the refugees. We were so busy just getting everybody resettled. When the numbers dropped dramatically, we looked at the phase two. How can we make them self-sufficient and empower them to have their own businesses? So we started, the first business we started was Radiant Kitchens. We picked women who their food was good, and we had them do the sanitation training. We got a license for a kitchen, and they began a catering business. Last month, we opened officially Radiant Tailors, which is a group of refugees who work professional tailors overseas, and they trained other refugees here, and now the business is run entirely on newcomers. And just in the last couple of weeks, we've been getting quite a bit of business. We'd like to open a third one, which is handyman skills, people who can lay tile, who do painting. And they have a lot of these refugees who come, they are very skilled, but they don't know the language and they don't know the system. So what we try and do, we give them financial literacy classes. We offer English classes, typing classes, QuickBooks for people who have maybe some managerial or bookkeeping, even if it's not experience, they have the ability to learn it. The weekend classes for kids in middle school and high school to do tutoring, English and math, to make sure they are successful. We partnered with tutoring organizations in Tampa who provide SAT prep. So a large number now of the kids who came in 2016 are doing very well in HCC. We have our first group that made it to USF. One of them is doing biomedical engineering. So it's a very intense process that relies on hundreds of volunteers. But the results are unbelievable. And these people become positive, productive members of our community.
Well, we have one of our Afghan refugees who has come through both Radiant Hands and Lutheran Services with us on the line. We have Gul Shabar, who has been very patient and holding on. Mr. Shabar, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning to everybody. And yes, I'm here.
Terrific. I can hear you perfectly. Thank you for calling us. Now tell us about you are a person from Afghanistan, correct?
Yes, I'm from Afghanistan. I came in 2019 to Florida, Tampa.
Uh-huh. And what brought you to the Florida area?
Actually, I was applying for refugees, IOM. So I put the address for one of my cousins in the Temple Terrace area. So he was living back here. He has been here for more longer than me. And I came, and when I started, those refugees organizations, they help us, and we were not know many things in the area, so they show us how to live, and they change a lot of things for us, by help way, we understood, and now we are happy. My children go to school.
You came with your family?
Yes, I do came with my family.
Okay. And so you had school-age children, and presumably you had a wife, and
yes.
And everybody had... Now, your English skills are very good. Did the rest of your family speak English when you came?
Actually, no. I was an interpreter for the U.S. military in Afghanistan for since 2002 to 2019. So when I came in, my language, for me was not a problem. For my daughters, my wife, you know, it was hard. Now they are good, and they are, like, sometimes I telling the people, you know, like, my kids teach me how to say something in English.
That's the same with all our kids, I think.
So, yeah, they are very good. They go to school, and they are happy, and they know now everything. Like, a lot of time I ask them, hey, what is good to get, or, like, in a store or some. So they're directing me nowadays, so I'm happy.
Have you found the people in the Tampa Bay community to be welcoming to you and your family?
Yes, there is a lot of people who help us. And, you know, like the beginning start, you know, we were not know many people. Now, you know, we got know people. And because of this Radiant Hands, you know, we live nearby their community, you know, where Radiant Hand have those classes, like English classes, and there is some other, you know, classes like for small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So we attend those. We knows each other from there, you know, talking to each other. So that's how we knows each other. And they are a very big help to us, most of them.
Well, that's very good to hear. Mr. Shabar, do you still have people, without identifying anybody, do you still have people, family or friends who who were up until 3 days ago, I guess, who were trying to leave? Do you know whether they made it out or...
No, actually, you know, we haven't heard from them. And, you know, like, I think there is no internet, no phone connection, and where they are right now. So we haven't heard anything from them yet. So
you mean people who stayed in Afghanistan, you haven't been able to contact them?
You know, I spoke with those people who live in Afghanistan, but I had a family member, like my brother. He was coming in, you know, he have this SIV visa. He was an interpreter for the coalition forces over there, American forces. So he left the country, and now last we heard on August 26th, he is in Germany. One of his friends left a message to one of the guy, and we haven't heard back from him yet. So there is something, I think they not have internet access or phone use in access. So that's why I think we didn't hear anything from him.
Well, it must be a comfort to you, though, to know that he has managed to leave the country, if that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah, it's, you know, he left his daughter and his wife in Afghanistan, and he came out because he had a young daughter, like 4 months old, his wife. So he decided to leave them with his mother-in-law. So right now they live over there with them, and they're worried, and I'm worried, you know, I hope he's okay, you know.
What kinds of worries do you and other Afghan people have for the people who remained in country?
You know, like, just, you know, like, it's over there is the situation is not, they're not feeling safe, and, you know, like, the main thing is safety. You know, they not rely on those who they're working with right now. And, you know, so they just want to have a life, you know. That's what they want to go outside of their country, because there is some people they have worked for government for years. And now they are got stuck over there, you know, so.
Yes, now I see in the news that the Taliban have engaged in something like a charm offensive. They're saying that since they have taken control, that they are not out for retribution. They're not looking for people who worked with the coalition forces to harm them. But the word from Afghanistan is that some of the Taliban are still going house to house to look for people who helped the United States and the coalition forces. And, of course, many Afghan women are terrified that all of the gains that they made during the American occupation will now be lost as the conservative religious Taliban issue more restrictive laws and restrict women's place in society. What do you think about that, Mr. Shabar?
Yeah, it is true, you know, there's those people, they have, you know, like, I have a young sister, she is like 17 year old, she was going to school before. Now, since this thing have happened, you know, the changes, you know, we even cannot leave the houses. It's not just for my family, there is a lot of family like that, you know, and... You know, like I spoke with my mom. She haven't left the house since this changes. You know, like they just taking the kids outside to get the food and stuff very quick and come home, you know. So everybody just like worried, you know. It is a big thing for them. And, you know, like just by saying something is not going to, you know, not the people will understand. They are in a big need help, you know. That was I was mean, like they really need help. And
where do you think help is going to come for them, the people still in Afghanistan at this point? The United States is gone and they're not coming back, they say.
I know, but I mean, like still, you know, they are looking into get out to other countries like Europe, America, Canada, somewhere, you know, just to get, you know, like to save their lives, you know.
Yeah.
That's what they think and that's what they want, you know. They just want to live, you know.
Sure. Mr. Shabar, can you hold on the line? Will you stay on hold with us while we take a listener call?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Janet, do we have somebody?
Yep.
We have Ahmed.
Ahmed in Tampa, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Yes, I would say you said that the people are not feeling safe because, you know, they were hyped about the threat of the Taliban. And when the airport was crashed, it was because people were in such fear. Because what they have been being told. Are you still there?
Yes, we can hear you.
You know, but the thing is, what we see is that the Taliban had protected the airport. And we know that there was an agreement that was made, and it sounds like they were promised some equipment as a result. But then when they got the equipment, it was made unoperational. The military planes and other equipment. That doesn't fare very well for an agreement. But, you know, as a pacifist, you know, program, a purported pacifist programming, you know, why would people stand with the United States when the United States invaded Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan? And it has been... It has not resulted in making anyone safer in the United States or in Afghanistan that are innocent people. You know, it has resulted in making some people on the earth safer because they've implemented technology as a result of these so-called threats. And who would say that spending $3 trillion, you know, would have been worth going after a bin Laden You know, when they claimed that Bin Laden was behind the attack that killed 3,000 people, well, how many people did die afterwards in all those wars as a result of this lie? So,
are you suggesting that Al Qaeda and Bin Laden were not behind the 9/11 bombings, the 9/11 planes into skyscrapers?
I don't really know much about Al-Qaeda. I think Bin Laden was somebody who was considered to be anti-Western. And I think that that we were given a secondary image of him since 9/11, not the real Bin Laden. I think the original organization, Al-Qaeda, was probably taken over just as the ISIS was taken over, which was originally the Islamic State of Iraq. It was Saddam Hussein. A loyalist. Once they eliminated that group, they used that name. Now that's become the new threat because it's just like the coronavirus. You know, you couldn't keep telling people, oh, we got corona out here, and you're giving them vaccines and you're telling them it's still spreading.
Well, before we get so far afield into the virus, Ahmed, are you personally an immigrant? Hello?
Well, yes. I was born in the United States.
Uh-huh.
I've got a call as another person because otherwise they won't take my call.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
I have a rounded discussion, but I would love to interview your guest. If somebody could please provide me with this information for him, I'd like to sit down and ask him some questions.
Okay, thanks, Ahmed, for the call. I appreciate it very much. We've got another caller. We have Jack in Hillsborough. Jack in Hillsborough, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi,
Jack.
How's everybody today?
Great. How are you?
Doing well. Well, I personally feel a lot safer. And the fact that these immigrants are coming over here, I think that it's a big plus. Of course, I lived in St. Louis when a lot of Bosnians came to St. Louis. I think like maybe 4,000 of them or something. I know it was a pretty large number. And they turned out remarkably well. One family that I keep in touch with, I talk to their sons. One still lives here in St. Louis and in Carondelet Park with his mom. And his father and his younger brother, who married a girl from Vietnam, lives in Germany. And while he was in America, Murata became a policeman. He went to college. He got a degree in criminal justice. And became a policeman, and now he lives in Germany.
So you are an example, Jack, of the type of person in the Tampa Bay area who is someone who welcomes immigrants. And
there's no reason not to welcome them. I mean, you know, there's nothing in their background. There's nothing that says that, you know, they have done anything over the last 20 years other than support our military over there. There hasn't been another 9/11 in 20 years, probably as a large result of the relationship that we were able to develop with them. And I mean, I'm a civilian, I'm not in the military, but last night when I saw the president, you know, get on the TV and say that he's confident that the leaders of the Taliban are going to keep their word and actually assist people that want to leave the country to help them get to the airport, because some of them, you know, are in remote areas, but that they're going to give them safe passage and they're going to allow them to leave. And I believed it. You know, maybe I'm just an optimist, but I hope that it turns out to be that way. And that we as a country can embrace the people that are coming in, the refugees that are coming in, and help them become, you know, more have a sustainable living for themselves, whether they decide to stay in the United States or go elsewhere.
Right, and participate in our. Thanks for the call, Jack. Appreciate it very much. Anyone else wants to call, give us a call at 239-9663 or send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. We had an email from Karen who says, similar to what Jack was saying, we should welcome the immigrants. I always think of what it says on the Statue of Liberty. Liberty, give me your tired and your poor. We cannot become a country of, she says, inclusivity and hate. I think she means exclusivity and hate.
Right.
We also have an email from David Bryant. So this is interesting. He says, I find it interesting that, this is a question for you, Ghoul. I find it interesting that CBS has a sitcom called United States of Al, which features an Afghan interpreter who moves in with a U.S. soldier friend of his. David wants to know, Ghoul, if you've seen this show and what do you think about it? And I'm going to watch it tonight if I can, because that sounds really interesting to me. Who knew that this is like now part of our pop culture?
I didn't know that.
Have you seen that show, Ghoul, or are you familiar with it?
No, I actually not. I haven't seen that.
Our phone answer for Patty Perky is waving. She says she has seen it. Is thumbs up, thumbs down? Thumbs up. She says it's a good show.
Thumbs up. Okay. So it's on CBS, huh? The United States of Al. Okay. Well, maybe you should check it out, Mr. Shabar. It may reflect some of your experience, at least. Let me ask Lourdes, before we bring in any other callers. Lourdes, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do we know how many Afghan refugees from this $120,000 airlift, 20,000 person airlift, do we know how many are coming to the Tampa Bay area?
100% no.
Okay. So we don't know how many cupcakes to buy, huh?
Exactly. I know that there is another program because, again, we have two groups of Afghans. We have the SIVs, the one that they get in, special immigrant visa, but then another side of individuals, you know, how to be processed for parole status, you know, women and girls at risk. So those, we know for sure how many we will get as an agency, and we're counting around 75. But then SIV, since they have a preference where they want to go, then the State Department honors that. You know, they can come anywhere. But again, we're ready for them. As I said, LSF has been resettling refugees and Afghan refugees since 1973. So we're not new.
And do you coordinate with the other agencies like Gulf Coast Jewish and Catholic Charities? And is there like coordination among the agencies to receive and sort of divide up these communities of refugees as they come in, when they come in a big group?
Absolutely. We work together in this effort because the only way that we can succeed is sharing resources, sharing experience, sharing common knowledge, you know, and again, as you heard from Radio Hands, and we work with, you know, every single one around, you know, in our efforts to resettle refugees. As a matter of fact, we have quarterly community consultations that Gulf Coast Jewish Family Services and Lutheran Services, that we pretty much run those meetings in you know. So then the community will learn about the populations that we serve in, you know, the issues, their challenges, you know, and how the community could help. So, yes, we as a matter of fact, we celebrate soon and during this month, the Welcoming Week, which is a week that we take to celebrate, as a matter of fact, the contributions of the refugees in our community. So we partner in many, many different areas and we share resources, we share, you know, insights and trainings, all of that. So, yes, absolutely.
I as I was promoting this show on social media, I got some comments from people who were very surprised to learn that the Tampa Bay area had such a developed and robust immigrant resettlement agency community, you know, resources that were here in the community that are often, you know, people don't know about, and they don't have, you know, the connections, if they're not themselves a part of the immigrant community, to assist or to help or to even know that this work is going on. So I'm wondering if there is a special place for people in the community who, I got a lot of comments from people who wanted to help in some way, but don't know mm-hmm. how and don't know what they personally can do to help mm-hmm. The people on the front lines, I guess, of the resettlement community. Mm-hmm. Can you give us some idea of what people can do and how they could help?
They could help in different capacities. It all depends on, you know, what they are, what they can do, kind of resources. As I said, we take furniture. We can sign up to sponsor a refugee family. Of course, that every single volunteer gets, you know, screened for us. Because, again, if you're part of, you're working with a family, you must pass a background investigation and all of that. They could sign up as a volunteer. We have on our LSF webpage where they can go and then email us, let us know that they're interested in volunteers.
What is the web page?
It is www.lsf.
L-S-F.
F. Mm-hmm. Net. N-E-T. .org.
LSFnet.org. Okay.
Correct. They can sign up there as a volunteer, and then, or they can email our development department, you know, in any efforts that they want to contribute to these new refugees. They also can call us at 813-877-9303. And then the only thing that I have to say, I need to reach out to the community engagement staff member, and then the community engagement is the one that is going to handle. We open arms to every single one that wants to contribute. We don't say no to anything.
Great.
So close. Yeah.
Okay. So, and Radiant Hands, tell us, Ms. Elkady, how can people assist Radiant Hands in their mission?
So I think one of the first things to do is to follow the Radiant Hands Tampa Facebook page, and we continuously update with volunteer forms, what we need, drop-off locations for furniture, for clothing. For a long time, we stopped accepting any used clothing, but now we're accepting as long as it's like new condition. We're going to have a lot of people coming in, and it's not only Afghan refugees. We're expecting a lot of other people from the other countries after October 1st. We need physicians and dentists who are willing to volunteer their services or do a like a cost sharing with us. We have right now about 7 dentists in the community who work with us. A lot of these people come with dental hygiene issues. They all get Medicaid, but the only thing Medicaid will do is extractions. So they just keep taking out their teeth, and once you have no teeth, you can't get a job. So these dentists help us with fillings, with minor dental work, so they don't have to lose a tooth. They actually even do root canals. So we have this collaboration with them, even physicians who will see them. So they're not waiting in line maybe for months for an appointment at a health department to get in. Anybody who has cell phone business who can help, interpreters, we have, especially Afghanis, anybody who can speak their language, go
Which
with
is
them to doctors.
Pashto or Dari,
so there are different languages within each country. And once we identify those languages, we put out messages looking for people with that background. And we have a lot of people who are willing to translate over the phone or go with them to an appointment. Furniture donations, time. Going, just sorting through everything that gets donated takes a lot of time. Donating money. We get gas cards once they get cars. Donating cars once they get driver's licenses. We do have the driver's license handbook translated into Arabic. We got that from Coptic Charities. They shared it with us. It probably needs to be translated into other languages because, as Ghul said, the interpreters speak English well. Most of their family members do not. So for the wives to get that same opportunity, we need a lot of translation services. But the best thing is to go to the Facebook page, Radiant Hands Tampa, and the website is radianthands.org. There's also places to volunteer and to donate.
I want to thank our guests, Magda El-Khadi from Radiant Hands, Lourdes Macias from Lutheran Services, and Mr. Gul Shabar for giving us their time and giving us this information about the Afghan immigrant experience and how the people in the Tampa Bay community can truly welcome our new residents to this area. Thank you all very much, and we will be back next week on Midpoint at 10 a.m. on Wednesday. Stay tuned for Talking Animals with Duncan. And thanks to Patty Perkey for answering our phones. Bye, Janet.
The NPR News is up next. This is WMNF Tampa.